Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to Tripod Talk Radio, where we're spreading the word that it's better to hop on three legs than limp on four. Hosted by Jim and Renee and Wyatt Ray of the Tripods Blogs community at tripods.com, Jerry's place for canine amputees and their people.
Hello and thank you for listening. This is Tripod Talk Radio, and today is Thursday, March 30th, 2017. We have an informative program for you today addressing one of the most common questions we get from new Tripods members. We're going to be talking about prosthetics and partial amputation in dogs. But first, real quick, I want to take just a moment to remind listeners about the Tripods Rescue Fund, a program of the Tripods Foundation that will reimburse the adoption fee for anyone who rescues a three-legged dog or cat from an animal shelter. Learn more at try.pet/tryrescue and spread the word. The Tripods Rescue Fund is made possible by Carbach Brewing, makers of Three-Legged Lab. Read all about this fine stout and its namesake Molly at carbachbrewing.com. You know, a couple years ago, we had the honor of interviewing Dr. Felix Duer from Colorado State University's Small Animal Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation Program. You can watch our complete video series at tripods.com/tag/CSU-ortho. Today, we are honored to have Dr. Duer back with us today to discuss the work he is doing at CSU in the evaluation of partial amputation in dogs, a clinical study that examines how partial amputee tripods cope with artificial limbs. Dr. Duer, thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Hey there, how are you doing?
Hey, Dr. Duer, we're doing great. This is Renee. We really appreciate you taking time out of your day to be here.
Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, really. Well, you know, your name came up when we were at the Western Veterinary Conference in Las Vegas a few weeks ago because a gentleman walked up to us and said, "My dog is in a prosthetic study." And I said, "Really? Tell me more about it." And when he did, I said, "I know that guy. I know Dr. Duer." So this is super exciting, and I just can't wait to hear more about it. Let's just jump in and tell me about the study and what brought this on. What made you want to do it?
Well, when we talked, I think this was now a couple of years ago, you know, you asked a lot of questions and I couldn't really answer them. So it was like, well, what do they do with it? And what level of amputation is acceptable? So where can we get a prosthetic that works at that level of amputation and those type of questions? And yeah, we want to answer some of those questions because, as you know, in small animals, there's still the saying that dogs are born with three legs and a spare. And I know you know this, and probably a lot of your listeners know this as well, that over time, there's a lot of issues that come up regarding the other joints, so more arthritis and ligament injuries and all sorts of things. So, you know, we're trying to put some evidence behind the idea of, hey, they are actually better off with four legs, and then figuring out, well, can we make this happen?
Oh, that is so exciting. And I would totally agree with that statement about, yeah, we do see a lot of issues over time. I have friends with tripods whose dogs have been on three legs for a number of years, and now that the dogs are older, they're seeing a lot of issues that four-legged dogs don't have. So we really appreciate you doing this because we're all going to learn from it and help our dogs live better lives. So the study is currently happening at Colorado State right now, correct?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Okay, so tell me about the dogs who are and are not eligible and good candidates for this study? Does their age matter? Does their weight matter? Who, what kind of dogs do you look for when you select the ones for this, this study?
Yeah, weight matters to some degree, and breed matters as well. So there is a little bit of a limitation on what we can do as far as getting the prosthetics to stay attached when we have dogs that have that are overweight and they have very little humerus to hold on to. So, you know, if you picture like a bulldog, it's very hard to get a prosthetic to stay on for these dogs. So usually the best candidates are, you know, somewhat like labs, that type of thing. They, you know, their humerus extends up quite a lot higher. We can get a little bit better, what we call suspension. So that's probably the biggest battle we've been fighting, is to, you know, in people they use a lot of suction prosthetics, so it's much easier. But since our friends have fur, it's very difficult to make it attach via suction. So that's why what we need to use is we need to use some kind of bony prominences. So more lower on the leg, the problem is, the better. And as far as health, yeah, we are trying to make sure that they are healthy to the point that they have at least a year of life expectancy. So, you know, some cancers unfortunately have very poor prognosis, and we, you know, it sometimes takes some time to get them used to the prosthetic. So we like to enroll dogs where we think that they at least are expected to live another year.
So that that pretty much would eliminate dogs who have been diagnosed with osteosarcoma.
Not 100%. So we actually have enrolled a couple of dogs with osteosarcoma just when they are going on chemotherapy. You know, nowadays we're kind of hoping that we get to about a year. And truthfully, our goal is to kind of get some pilot data where we learn something from and then expand that into a larger study. So we're trying to get some more funding for a larger study. And just this one is basically just a proof of concept that we can get those prosthetics to work in dogs, and then we can basically make this happen.
Oh, my gosh, that is really cool. I'm glad to hear that even the osteo dogs can be considered. So tell me, how quickly can a dog get admitted into the study? For example, if a dog was in a car accident and they needed amputation right away, how soon before your team would look at their situation and say you're needing in the study?
Well, I think that we can admit them pretty quickly, like literally tomorrow. But the problem is that there's a lot of visits that are required for it so that we can figure out, you know, that we can get our data, how well are they using the leg. So we're using a doggy Fitbit, so an accelerometer on the dog itself. Uh-huh. And then we also have one on the prosthetic so that we can actually objectively tell how often did the dog wear this prosthetic so that we know, hey, how are they doing? Because obviously, you know, having a prosthetic is nice, but if it's only used for a few minutes a day, then is that really worth the effort? What we're hoping for is that, you know, these dogs are, after some time, using it the majority of the day. So, and then we also do objective gait analysis, so we see how much weight are they actually putting on it, and then the rehabilitation that's required afterwards to get them to use the leg is also included in that study. So, you know, we really are looking for dogs that are living somewhere in the Fort Collins area. Fort Collins, Denver, we have one dog enrolled that's from a little further away where the owners are very dedicated and they're coming down for the visits. But it's a lot of visits, so it's harder for people that are living further away.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I did when I asked you that, so yeah, to clarify it for dogs, you know, who are in the immediate vicinity of CSU. So would you say, like, as far as Colorado Springs and Laramie, would you consider those dogs up and down I-25?
Absolutely. I mean, we don't, you know, if people are willing to drive, I mean, as long as they're willing to do the rechecks, it's, you know, it's just a matter of are they wanting to do this? So I think it's up to the owner, really, if they want to take the time to do that, yeah.
Okay. And so once a dog gets accepted into the study, what are the parameters we're seeing in the study and not getting kicked out? Like, what are some circumstances that might eliminate a dog from the trial?
Well, so we had one that didn't wear his prosthetic, so he kept on shaking it off. And so that dog, you know, but it's not that he's eliminated from the trial. I think, you know, we still use that data because that's important information as well, right? That dog had an amputation just mid-radius, so maybe that is a little bit too high. And it was also a small border collie, a little bit more stubby legs. So we don't really... all the dogs that are enrolled, they are part of the trial. And even if things don't work out, we still want to know this, right? Because that's what everybody wants to know. Is this an option for my dog? What are the chances of it working? And, you know, even if it's not working, I think that's still very useful data. So that's what we have to figure out. What are the indications? To which level can you amputate a leg and then still be successful at attaching the prosthetic?
That would be really great to hear, because let's say, for example, you only have a little bit of stump, but it's kind of questionable whether or not, I mean, whether or not a prosthetic will work. After your study, you'll be able to tell people, well, this study said that a dog with this much limb left will be a good candidate. I mean, we have something to point people to now, correct?
Well, yes and no. The problem is that every breed is different. There's, you know, a lot of different levels of amputation. So this is a quite expensive study, as you can imagine, with a prosthetic, the rehabilitation and all that. So unfortunately, I think the data we're getting will be pretty limited because, you know, we'll have maybe two dogs that are at the level of the carpus and two that are mid-radius. And just because one dog didn't work, I wouldn't say that you can say, hey, that doesn't work. So I think really the goal is for us to, you know, get some what we call pilot data. So like, just an initial, number of dogs where you say, hey, and some it worked and some it didn't work. Now our next step is to figure out for which dogs exactly does it work and for which ones does it not work. So I think that this will be just the start of this, but hopefully this will excite people to get us more funding and support this research, and then maybe other people will continue something along those lines as well. And then over time, we'll find out the answers to the questions that you're asking. Yeah.
Oh, that would be really cool. Are you the first institution that's actually doing a study like this?
Well, I can tell you there is no published research on these type of prosthetics. There is research on the prosthetics that you attach to the bone, so where you have an implant that goes into the bone and then a part of it sticks out through the skin. There have been some studies on that, but there hasn't been anything with these prosthetics. And I don't know if anybody else is working on it. I've been talking about it a lot at conferences. And I haven't talked to anybody that said, yeah, we're doing a similar study. But, there's no way to really know that. Maybe somebody else is. And honestly, I hope that somebody else is, because the more people that are researching it, the better, right?
Yeah, definitely. So tell me, OrthoPets is closely involved with this study. So tell me, what exactly are they doing for it? They're creating the devices. How extensive is their involvement?
Yeah, so this is a collaboration that started way before I started at CSU. One of our previous surgeons asked OrthoPets, specifically Martin Kaufman, who's the founder of that company, asked him to come by and see if he can help us with some of these dogs that we don't really have a solution for. And so they are basically at CSU at least, twice a month. And what they do is they will take a mold of the limb. I mean, we do take the molds as well, but for these study cases, we always try to get Martin to be there so that we make sure it's 100% perfect. And he knows exactly how the dog looks like. And then they'll make the device. And then, we do adjust these, from time to time and have to make little tweaks. And so we talk with Martin about all of those things. And then particularly when we have dogs that don't do as well, so where they slip off the device, then we try to solve that. So we have one dog where we came up with a vest that we can use to keep it attached. So those are the types of conversations that we have, and it's great to have them close by, because I think a lot of this is actually you have to see it, and it's kind of hard to do that via video. So we're pretty fortunate that we're close to somebody that makes those.
Yeah, and not just somebody. I mean, we love OrthoPets. We think they are the cat's pajamas, and they are pretty cool. So what you're saying is that the device types will vary between dogs. It really depends on how their assessment comes out and what their needs are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of those, and this is probably a key of this whole prosthetics in dogs. I think they're all custom made, and every, you know, for example, a dog that we currently are fostering has a little bit of carpus left, and that dog, you need to really see how do you work with what's remaining there to make it pain-free. Sometimes there's a little bit of a bone spur so that you may not want to push on with your device when they're walking on it. So I think those devices, they have to be custom made, and they have to be molded particularly for each patient. And every patient is a little bit different, you know, how they rotate the leg. So, I mean, this is literally this is my first real experience where we see the dogs on a regular basis, and we're learning so much. I think this is not a simple task, and I think it will be a huge learning curve for veterinary medicine.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So tell me, when they're in the program and in the study, how much training and rehab therapy is provided to them? Because I know that when we talked to OrthoPets, they said there's at least a few months of getting used to the device. How often do they go back to CSU? How long are the sessions, and what do the sessions look like?
Yeah, so I think it's a great question, and the answer is that really depends on each patient too. I think some of those, I think they all benefit from rehab to get used to, hey, this is actually part of my leg. I can actually move this, and to realize where is it. So a lot of what these sessions include is things like stepping over objects and maneuvering that and figuring out, hey, you know, this is a little bit longer than what I was used to. If they are congenital or if they are post-amputation, then we have to initially deal with the post-surgery pain and sometimes formation of seromas and all those things. So once they are past that stage, I think then if the dog's doing well, you know, it can be as little as twice a month. But it can also be that they have to come multiple times a week. So when we have issues of them not using it, then it becomes a lot more complicated.
Okay. This is really an individualized thing. It's amazing what you guys are doing for every dog. How many are you shooting for? How many dogs will be in the study overall? How many are in it right now?
Well, we're shooting for 12 dogs, and we have, I think we have 7 right now.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully we can find some more for you, because I know we have a lot of members in the vicinity. I'm really curious. This question popped into my head, and I know you may not be able to answer it, but I'm really curious to find out if, based on what you've seen so far, just on your observations, do the dogs who have been amputees for a while tend to do better or a little bit worse when they first put that artificial leg on?
I think I have to kind of phrase that carefully, because it's very limited the amount of experience we have with that. But the dogs that we have seen that have had, like one of them I can think of, I don't really know how long she has been living with this partial limb, but she definitely has had that for a long time, and she is from the Golden Retriever Freedom Rescue, and we enrolled her in the study and did a device for her, and I mean, she just from the first day was doing amazing with it. It took her a little bit to be like, oh, what's that? But I mean, now you can see a huge difference, and I think that it depends for her. I think it's the part that helps her a lot is that it's the amputation is quite low, so she has a lot of remaining leg. And then also, I think her other legs are quite arthritic, so she really likes the idea of putting some weight on that leg. So versus a dog that has 3 good legs and the amputation is higher and has been used to that, that might be a little bit harder. So I think it, I definitely don't think, based on what we've seen, that if a dog hasn't has had an amputation for a while that excludes them from doing well on prosthetics.
Oh, that's really good to hear. That is really nice. What about really young dogs, like under a year? Are you accepting any of those into the study?
Yeah, you get great questions. So that's actually one of the things that while doing the study we had to work through, because we actually have a case, German Shepherd, that is exactly in that scenario. We did enroll that dog with the idea of making a temporary prosthetic, so something a little bit easier. And then when mm-hmm. she's fully grown, we'll do a real prosthetic for her. So I think we wanted to just kind of see how will this work. Is it possible if we do a temporary prosthetic that we encourage her to use that? Because I think that's actually mm-hmm. one of the things, if they're that young, it might be easier to get them to use it earlier in their life, rather than when they're, you know, if you wait a few months, they might be so used to it just walking on three legs that it might be harder for them, because their other joints are quite normal and they're young and puppies and, you know, crazy. So they might not do as well, but I don't know that. But that's why we enrolled that dog, because we wanted to find out, hey, how about exactly that question? How about puppies if you know, they're still growing?
Oh, that is so exciting. I'm just so excited about this. So getting back to the part about the training and the rehab, I forgot to ask you, how much of a role does the owner play in the dog's acceptance? I mean, obviously they have to put it on and off, but once they do, is it a matter of just watching your dog walk around the house all day and see how it does, or does the owner have a considerable amount of homework that you guys assign once they get home?
Yeah, I think that this is another one of those where, depending on how well the dog is doing, you know, it might be actually quite a lot. So we do give them home exercises to do, and, you know, those cavalettis are easy to make at home, and that can be quite helpful. And now, if the dogs are doing well, I think some owners, they don't do very much at home, but... mm-hmm. I think it is something that is easily, you know, if owners are into it, the more you do of these exercises, the better. And the other part that you mentioned and that I think is important to realize is the putting it on and taking it off. You know, there is a little bit of, there's a little bit of finesse involved with that, like making sure that you get it exactly to the right level. Making sure that it's comfortable when you put it on. So I think it is a little bit of a learning curve, and some people have an easier mm-hmm. time with that than others. And, you know, some dogs are a little bit easier. They don't have to be as tight, a little bit easier to put on than others. So I think there is a little bit of a hesitation from some owners, depending on, how often we show them. We sometimes see that they are not quite put on correctly, and then it requires a few times for us to be around, and then when people get comfortable with it, it's like putting on your own shoes. But in the beginning, you know, there's a little bit of a learning curve for sure, and so that's part of that initial learning for the owners and the participation.
So you're not just training the dogs, you're training the people too.
to some degree.
A lot of work. Yeah,
well, at least
definitely.
The people,
I mean,
we can talk to them. You know, the dogs
right.
are a little bit more difficult. We have to show them.
Yeah, and I just love that you're doing this, because I think, you know, so many people are under the misconception that, oh, I'm going to get a prosthetic for my dog, and it's going to be so easy. I'm just going to put it on him in the morning and take it off at night. And, you know, my goal is to educate people so that they can make this decision knowing what's involved. So I think this is so exciting. I forget, for our feline members out there, how come cats aren't included in the study, and do you anticipate in the future you might?
Well, so I think cats are very, very hard to, even when it comes to bandaging. They mm-hmm. don't love wearing bandages. They are much more fuzzy about this. So I think what we decided is, let's start with dogs, because I think we have a better chance of being successful in that. And when we answered all the questions in dogs, then let's move on to cats. It's just, you got to pick your battles. If there's somebody that says, hey, I want you to research this in cats, absolutely, we're happy to do it. But you know, we got to allocate our funding to somewhere where we think we got the best chance of making a difference. And, you know, the bigger picture of this is that, as you know, there are a lot of people with prosthetics, wounded warriors, all that, that there are a lot of questions. I spent some time with human surgeons, and they do have a lot of questions on things that we can possibly answer by using dogs as a model. So basically, if we can figure out what is the best way to deal with a nerve in dogs, so when you do this partial amputation, what should you be doing with the nerve so that it doesn't become a source of pain later on because it doesn't have the muscle attached to it anymore? If we can figure that out in dogs, that will also be quite helpful for our counterparts in the human surgeons. And so that's where I think a lot of the funding might be coming from in the future, is Department of Defense, those type of funding sources that we're kind of trying to get into. And obviously, the more successful the initial studies are, the more likely we are to get that funding.
Absolutely. And that is the thing I want to close with, is I want to let everybody know, I mean, you have to get your money from somewhere. This is a really expensive program that you're doing here. I'm wondering, can you give me a ballpark on what the cost is per dog? Do you have any idea, like, that you can throw out there or not?
Yeah, I think the amputation cost is around $2,000, and then the prosthetic somewhere between $1,000, $1,500 in that range. And then the rehabilitation, you know, it really depends on how often, but it's about, you know, depending on how long the sessions are, about $100 per session. So, you know, it adds up quite a lot. And so that's part of why I think we need to figure out, well, exactly for which dog is this a good idea? Because, you know, we do have a lot of owners inquiring about it. And if I would tell them, hey, this whole thing costs you $5,000, and you got a 95% chance of this working, then I think a lot of people would say, okay, I'm happy to do that. But if you say, I don't know, is it working, then that's a different story, right? I think that's why so many dogs are ending up with an amputation, because, you know, we do know that that is without a lot of complications, at least in the short term.
Right, exactly. I mean, give us a hard number so we can make a better informed decision, for sure, because there's a lot of a vagueness out there about all of this. We see it all the time at Tripods. We are all about supporting studies like this, and hey, if anybody out there wants to donate to CSU's, you know, I think it's a great place to focus your money, because you guys are doing amazing work there, and we really appreciate it. And, you know, I'm thinking that, like, once you do a few of these studies, this could potentially change the direction that surgery goes when amputation is on the table, right? I mean, this could change the guidelines for, this is where a leg needs to be amputated in order for a dog to live a successful life afterwards, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of the bigger goal. And you know, you actually just said that, and I didn't mention that before. The dogs that we enroll, most often, they have been recommended to receive a full amputation. That's kind of, you know, they have a cancer that has come back 5 times, and the veterinarian says, hey, I think your dog should get a full amputation. And then that's where we say, hey, you know, why don't we try this and see how it goes?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it will change how people talk about amputations, I think.
I am really excited for that day, because we see so many members who come to us and their dog has had a full amputation, even though they had, you know, a problem that was only in the paw or the carpal area. And so it just, it's very exciting to know that there's going to be more dogs out there with a better overall quality of life throughout their lifetime. So thank you so much for doing this, and we're going to help get the word out.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right, Dr. Dore, you have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yes, thank you very much for your time, Dr. Dore. We look forward to following the results of your study. Listeners can learn more about the work being done at CSU's Veterinary Teaching Hospital at tripods.com/tag/CSU. Until next time, join the discussion about amputation for dogs and cats, and find many helpful resources at tripods.com. Three-legged dog, three-legged dog, three-legged dog, three-legged dog.
Until next time on Tripod Talk Radio, learn more about canine amputation recovery and find the best gear for three-legged dogs at tripods.com. Ha ha ha!